This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we'll be hearing about new videos recently released by the Justice for Desmond Phillips team that bring up questions regarding conflicting accounts from police officers about what happened on the night Desmond Phillips was killed by law enforcement 3 years ago. If you have questions or comments for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Friday, July 17th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. We are in a moment where people all over this nation are questioning and calling out systemic racism and police brutality. But for one particular group in the North State, this conversation around police violence and demands for accountability have been taking place for years. It was March 17, 2017, when Desmond Phillips, a 25-year-old Black man who was suffering from a mental health episode, was shot and killed by Chico police. It was ruled by a federal judge that the officer's actions in the shooting were justified. But new videos acquired through the discovery process in the Phillips family's unsuccessful wrongful death case against the city of Chico raise questions about conflicting accounts of the shooting by the three officers who were involved. The videos, which have been edited, were recorded hours after the shooting happened and were posted to the Justice for Desmond Facebook page. In them, officers give differing accounts to what happened that night to police investigators from the accounts they gave 2 years later while under questioning by an attorney for the Phillips family in their civil case. To learn more about what exactly the videos show and what the Justice for Desmond Phillips team believes they mean, NSPR's Andre Bayek spoke with Rain Scher, a core member of the group.
I'd like to start with the videos released by Justice for Desmond Phillips earlier this week. They are clips showing the Chico police officers who shot Desmond Phillips being questioned by police investigators in the hours after Phillips was killed in 2017. Can you take me through the release of the videos? Where did they come from and why were they released?
Yes. So first off, I'd like to clarify that the video we released only includes three of the officers who were in the apartment during the incident that ended in Desmond's death. Those officers are Jared Cumber, Alex Fleer, and Jeremy Ganabin. There were two other officers present as well. They are David Martin and Derek Ament. And we have reason to believe that the other officers may have also been more actively involved in Desmond's death than the official police report claims. The videos that we shared were interviews that were done as a standard process soon after the incident happened that very night. You can see the timestamp on the videos that it was the middle of the night. However, that was the normal shift for those officers, so they were used to being up and working at that time and should have had their normal ability to think things through and all of that as part of their job. We acquired those videos through the discovery process in the civil case against the city of Chico by the Phillips family for wrongful death. We also made a public records request, both from David as well as a couple other of us as private citizens made public records requests requesting information like that, which was never given to us. The only way that we were able to get it is when there was actually a court case happening and a lawyer requested those documents, those files. In the video, we specifically cut just a few pieces from those interviews specifically to highlight that even right after they had just gone through this situation, those three officers tell three very different stories about what happened, particularly about the critical moment, which they claim as their excuse for shooting Desmond. And that is the most critical point of this case. And you can see in the video where they say that they feared for their lives, which is the classic line that police use as their way of protecting themselves from prosecution under the law, they get protected whenever they say that phrase, "I feared for my life." The three officers in the video describe what supposedly happened in very different ways. And I think it's really important to start by clarifying that what they said was different from what the physical evidence shows. So the physical evidence shows what David Phillips himself witnessed, which was that shots were fired at Desmond as he was falling to the ground. The door of the apartment was kicked open. Officer Cumber deployed a taser and tasered Desmond. His body seized up from the taser shock, and he fell to the ground. And in the process of that happening, officers opened fire on him. In the official record, the named shooters are Ganabin and Fleer. Those officers, that night and continuing into their depositions in interview for the civil case in 2019, they all claimed different versions of a story where they allege that Desmond got back up after being tased and that he presented a threat to them, supposedly, and that is their excuse for opening fire on him. In the 911 audio, anyone can hear that the sound of the taser goes off very clearly, and there's only a couple seconds before shots are fired. It is not possible, it is not physically possible for Desmond Phillips, who is over 6 feet tall, to have been seizing up from a taser, falling to the ground, then getting completely back up. And according to Ganabin, not only did he get completely back up, but supposedly then also reached back down and got back up a second time to supposedly charge with a knife. In addition to that, the angle of the shots fired into his body in the coroner's report show that he was shot while he was falling. The angle of the bullets as they entered his body, as well as the location of the shots where they impacted his body, were all in his upper torso and face and neck. And all of the bullet holes in the walls are below 3 feet high. So all of those shots were fired downwardly, and Desmond was taller than those officers. He had to have been below them when they fired. They claim that he was standing up when they fired. So we really wanted to show that contrast and show how differently their stories are from each other, which also shows that they're lying. In addition to that, in the video, we included a clip of Officer Ganabin admitting that he did not attempt any other intervention to subdue Desmond before opening fire. In addition to that, there is a clip of Officer Cumber admitting that he did not have CIT training, that is critical incident training, and there is a state-mandated minimum of 8 hours for critical incident training. That minimum existed when Desmond was killed. After he was killed, the Chico Police Chief O'Brien claimed that all officers had that training. That was later exposed to be untrue as well. The police chief lied about his officers, the officers who killed Desmond, having even state minimum critical incident training, which would have given them more resource to intervene in a situation where someone is in mental health crisis, as Desmond was.
Going back a little bit, when I personally watched the videos, I noticed an answer that Officer Jeremy Ganabin told investigators. It was when he said he did not have a reason for why he and Officer Fleer did not immediately jump on Desmond after he was tased. In a deposition that Ganabin gave 2 years later, he told lawyers what appears to be a different story, that one of the reasons he didn't jump on Desmond or subdue Desmond was that Desmond could have had knives. That was one reason. What do you make of that discrepancy between what Officer Ganabin said the night of the shooting and what he told lawyers 2 years later?
Well, first of all, it is one of many discrepancies that each of the officers made statements that were very different the night of the shooting and in depositions 2 years later. Another fairly broad discrepancy that Ganabin made was in describing the knives that he saw. In the video, he describes knives as being 10 to 12 inches long. In the deposition, he describes knives as being 5 to 8 inches long. The difference between those ranges is fairly big. And both Ganabin and Fleer say they didn't have any specific reason not to subdue Desmond as soon as he went down from the taser, except that later they do mention knives, and it's always in this very vague way. And ultimately, the reality is that both Ganabin and Fleer had their firearms drawn in hand when that door was kicked in, when that taser was deployed, and when they entered the apartment. So the thing that they had on hand that they were ready to do was fire guns. Before the door was kicked in, there was brief consideration of using a shield, using a beanbag shotgun. These are considered less than lethal means. But when they actually entered the apartment, they decided to take out their guns, and they had them ready in their hands, and that's how they responded, was with their guns. And I don't think that they were in a mindset to be doing something other than firing their guns. I think that they went in there with intention to use guns, at the very least as a threat, if not actively firing. And frankly speaking, their training as Chico PD officers is very focused on the use of firearms and spends very little time teaching them or creating habits or practices other than firing guns. And this is incredibly significant to looking at policing and how it results in deaths like Desmond's from start to finish, from the beginning of them deciding to become a police officer. Their focus is very much on guns and deadly force. And in interview, in the depositions, Officer Fleer is also extensively questioned about his training around use of force, and his responses are fairly vague in that he can't really articulate why he would not use force. And that's significant. And it's significant that it is taken for granted that if they used force, it must have been necessary. It was not necessary in this situation.
And that's also, going back to the videos, something that I noticed Officer Fleer answering a question by saying he had no other option but to use his gun. What do you make of that? And then his answers in that deposition later regarding what you were just talking about.
I think that all of these officers, in responding to questions, both the night of the murder as well as 2 years later in deposition, all of them are in a defensive place. Their role, in theory, as police officers, in theory, they're employees of the public. In theory, their job is to protect and serve. However, they're individual human beings who are potentially facing consequences for some very serious actions that they committed against another human being. And so their priority as an individual is going to be to say whatever they think is necessary to protect their own well-being in that moment and the well-being of their fellow officers, frankly. And so that's why they know to say phrases like, "I feared for my life." That's why they say things like, "I had no other option." But when later questioned more extensively about what options their training might have taught them, they speak more obtusely and more avoidantly and more vaguely and admit that there are things that they learned that were non-deadly force, but they're not willing to admit what may have been possible in that moment. The night that they were interviewed, the night of the murder, they were interviewed by essentially fellow law enforcement. They were interviewed by people from the sheriff, from the DA. These are people who, their job in theory to do a thorough investigation. However, they're all in the same club together. It is in their interest to not ask the harder questions, to not push those harder questions. And the interview in the deposition, although it was 2 years later, is being done by an attorney representing the Phillips family. And that attorney's best interest is to get the most thorough answers possible out of these officers. And it's why in the deposition, a lot of the questions they're asked repeatedly, and they're asked to clarify repeatedly. Mm. And they continue to be avoidant and or, you know, hide in vagueness.
You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. Stay tuned.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Fidelity Wealth Management, where advisors work with their clients to develop flexible investment strategies that can evolve as their needs change. Learn more at fidelity.com/wealth. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting those working towards a day when no one has to choose between paying rent, putting food on the table, and protecting their health and the health of others. RWJF.org. Support for NPR comes from this station and from Progressive Insurance with the Name Your Price tool, offering a range of coverage and price options to choose from. Now that's Progressive. More at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. From the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, an online resource committed to offering inspiration and information about what works in K-12 education. More at edutopia.org. And from iDrive, maker of Remote PC, providing access to computers anywhere for remote assistance and work from home, featuring Remote PC Meeting, a video conferencing tool. More at remotepc.com.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Today, we're hearing an interview between NSPR's Andre Bayek and Rain Scher, a core member of the Justice for Desmond Phillips team. The group has recently released videos acquired through the discovery process in the Phillips family's unsuccessful wrongful death suit that show Chico police officers involved in the fatal shooting of Desmond Phillips in 2017, giving differing accounts to police investigators of what happened that night than their accounts given 2 years later under questioning by an attorney for the family's civil case.
There's another striking image from the videos released by Justice for Desmond. Officer Jeremy Ganabin, while answering questions about killing Desmond Phillips, a Black and Native man, the officer is in street clothes, wearing a t-shirt with the design of what appears to be a modified Confederate flag. It's a t-shirt for a country artist, Branton Lee Gilbert. I'm curious about your thoughts watching that scene play out, answering questions while wearing that shirt.
Yes. A lot of people try to minimize the implications of a Confederate flag, or in the case of this shirt, a stylized Confederate flag. And the reality is that that flag represents racism. To Black people, that flag represents danger. That flag represents violence to Black bodies. That flag has been, thankfully, being started to be taken down in various places all over the country. Mississippi is finally taking it off of their state flag because everybody is finally admitting what that flag really means. And it is incredibly significant that that was the street clothes that Ganabin was wearing that day in his life. It is incredibly significant that he would own a shirt like that in the first place, and that he's the kind of person who can sit there wearing that shirt and calmly and simply talk about the fact that he just killed a Black man.
You mentioned the moment of time we're in. The release of the videos come as there's ongoing protests against police violence and racism in the wake of the killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Chico City Council is making moves to review the city police department and its use of force policies, and also perhaps to look at ways to institute more training for officers in crisis intervention. Can you walk me through the moment we're in and maybe how the videos that Justice for Desmond released recently work together?
Yeah, we are really sad. You know, in this moment, it is a sad moment in time that it takes the violent death of people for things to change. That is incredibly tragic. And it is also very real that there is a lot of movement and motion happening right now because of those deaths. We have been fighting and shouting for over 3 years about what happened to Desmond Phillips in Chico, and have received very little support, particularly from those in positions of power like the city council. In general, the city council of Chico has taken a stance of basically ignoring us and actively supporting the police department and Chief O'Brien, who just recently retired. The reality that the city council is now saying that it's going to do certain things related to the police department, frankly, is rather empty for a couple of reasons. One is the Justice for Desmond Phillips team, the Phillips family, for 3 years has been making specific demands and recommendations for ways to improve policy and accountability and all those things related to the police department. The Chico City Council is not interested and has shown no interest in actively working with us on those actual requests, those demands that we have made. The current mayor, Ann Schwab, has created a committee that includes law enforcement, that does not include anyone from the Phillips family, from any other family who has lost somebody to the violence of Chico PD or Butte County law enforcement. The most impacted people, the most in danger people, are not included in the conversation about what is needed for the public to actually be safe when it comes to police. The committee is frankly an insult to everything that we have been working for over 3 years. This is the mayor's attempt to get the public to stop putting pressure on the city. This is how she is saying, in a very performative way, I'm going to do something without actually doing anything.
You mentioned institutions such as the city and the city council. I also believe the press plays a role in matters of police violence, shootings specifically. Going to your videos, if the press ignored the videos you've released, perhaps for reasons such as, look, it was edited in a way to make a point, it's not the whole video. I'm wondering if you think activists and victims of police violence are treated with a double standard by the press, where the press, myself included, will report what police say, regardless if it's the entire story or not, and maybe not be as trustworthy of what people not in those positions of power have to say about the same incidents.
Yes, I think that is absolutely true. And there are countless examples where reporting sometimes only includes the voices and perspectives of the people who are in positions and institutions of power, including the police and city government, and often are disregarding of voices of victims, of regular everyday civilians, of witnesses. And that has certainly been true in Desmond's case. As far as releasing the video goes, the local media, for the most part, has decided that they are generally not going to report on Desmond's case in general after the ruling of the civil case, and before that, after the unfortunate response we got from the state attorney general. We have a lot of evidence that came to us through the discovery process in the civil case. And it has taken us some time to get through it all. And what we have learned is that, generally speaking, the local media doesn't do a very good job of sharing this information. And so as much as possible, we try to put the narrative out through our social media platform on the Justice for Desmond Phillips Facebook page, people can see for themselves the kind of information that we are trying to share, whether the local media picks it up or not.
That was Rain Scher, a core member of the Justice for Desmond Phillips team, speaking with NSPR's Andre Bayek. To view the videos referenced in the interview, you can visit the Justice for Desmond Phillips page on Facebook. Because there were many people mentioned in this interview, we reached out to them for comment on the subject matter that was raised. Emails sent to Chico police officers Jeremy Ganabin, Alex Fleer, and Jared Cumber were not returned. Interim Chico Police Chief Matt Madden told NSPR that we should talk to the Chico City Attorney. He further said that it would be inappropriate for the Chico police officers involved in this story to talk to the media. In an email reply regarding the accusations of the Chico City Council's Police Review Ad Hoc Committee not having any representation from community members who have had loved ones killed by Chico police, and questions about why law enforcement is on the committee, Chico Mayor Ann Schwab wrote, "We must resist the temptation to say we are divided or our action will fail at the beginning of a process. Establishing trust between police department and the community is crucial. Lasting change won't happen unless the police and the community work together and shine light on policies and practices and gain common understanding and agreement. How do we know what needs to be changed without understanding? How can we actually listen and understand if we're yelling at each other? How can we make change if we lead with us versus them and winners and losers? Such an approach will only provide short-term answers. Having the police at the table demonstrates they are invested in exploring these issues and committed to being part of the process. This community is looking for long-term solutions such collaboration will bring. The Policing Review Ad Hoc Committee is tasked to review policing, not individual officers. This is a small committee. The committee welcomes input from the whole community. Public comment will be taken throughout our process. The committee will not review any specific cases." And that is your program. If you have thoughts for us, you can leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. Before we go, I do need to let you know that this was our last daily episode of this special coverage. We started this program as a daily on March 16th, 3 days before California Governor Gavin Newsom's initial stay-at-home order. Since that time, we have brought you 90 episodes of uninterrupted special news coverage, and we've done it completely remotely. Each of us reporting, writing, recording, and editing from our own home. While I wish we could, our small team simply cannot continue to run at this capacity. That said, we will continue to bring you this show as a weekly. You can tune in Thursday evenings at 6:30 and Friday mornings at 8:30. I hope you'll listen. Today's special coverage was produced by Andre Bayek. A special thanks to the rest of the team, Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Angel Haracha, Eric Radaville, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, News Director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. See you next week. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.